you so eager to be like the mammy to her Scarlett O'Hara? Like, let's talk about it. Like, let's have a conversation. Hello, everyone. This is Alex.
And this is Em.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic. This is the podcast for anyone who enjoys binging new TV series and revisiting old favorites.
On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we love, what we hate, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order. This week, we continue with our limited edition season and dive into a discussion of the engaging, oft-confusing, unbelievable miniseries, Inventing Anna.
Inspired by the true story of Anna Sorokin, Inventing Anna follows the party girl turned con artist who invented Anna Delvey, a German heiress. Through this new identity, Anna was able to sweet-talk her way into exclusive parties, clubs, and restaurants, negotiate her way into major business dealings, and fake it into the lives of some of the wealthiest of New York's old money. So is Inventing Anna worth watching? Stay tuned.
All right, you guys, here are some critical details about this series. Inventing Anna is classified as a drama. It is a Netflix original, and it's streaming over there. It was released February 11th, 2022, and it was inspired by an article in New York Magazine by Jessica Pressler entitled, How Anna Delvey Tricked New York's Party People. The series creator is Shonda Rhimes, and the series stars Julia Garner as Anna Delvey Sorokin, Anna Klumsky as Vivian Kent. This is a character inspired by Jessica Pressler. She is the woman writing an article about Anna. Arian Moyed as Todd Spodek, Anna's lawyer. Katie Lowles as Rachel Williams, Anna's friend and a key witness for the prosecution. Alexis Floyd as Neff Davis, concierge at the 12 George Hotel, aspiring filmmaker, and arguably Anna's only friend. Laverne Cox as Casey Duke, Anna's personal trainer. Anthony Edwards as Alan Reed, Anna's financial advisor. And Samir Usmani as Chase Sikorsky, Anna's on and off again boyfriend. These are some of our major players, although we do meet quite a few other people as well. This girl was not slowing down. She was grinding, and she took whatever it was she was doing, allegedly, supposedly, maybe, very seriously.
So something that's interesting about Inventing Anna that I did not know, that I found out after watching the series, is that actually there was like a fight about even just getting the story like written and produced and stuff was actually sort of like not a fight, but kind of a fight, because so Shonda optioned the New York Magazine story by Jessica Pressler. But the girl who plays Katie, the girl, Rachel, what's her name? Mm-hmm. Williams?
Rachel Williams.
Rachel Williams, played by Katie Lowe. She wrote a book. And apparently she sold her rights to HBO first before Shonda could scoop them up. So, like, it was actually this race between, like, Shonda Lynn and HBO, like, who was going to get the show up first. To my knowledge, the HBO show is still in development, so we could, but like HBO is also like, if you are a nerd, you probably listen to this podcast, so that means you probably know that HBO is in like huge flux right now in terms of David Zaslav and all the kids over there doing whatever it is they're doing. But technically it is still in development, and we could get like an HBO or I guess Max telling of Jessica's side, funny enough.
I mean, I don't feel like anything major is going to come out of a network, at least not anytime soon, that can't even decide what name it wants to go with at the moment. So I'm not going to hold my breath. And honestly, HBO, It's giving cult tales. It's giving lackluster. It's giving that kid in the fifth grade who, like, look cheats off your paper, and that's the only reason he's passing the class. Because a perfect example, Hulu released Candy, right, last year, starring Jessica Biel. And this was about the woman Candace Montgomery who killed her affair partner's wife, right?
Right.
And then HBO this year released Love and Death, starring Elizabeth Olsen as Candy. Now, is Elizabeth Olsen the superior actress? Yes. But I don't even have any interest in watching Love and Death, or Love and Murder, whatever it's called, because Jessica actually gave a really great performance in the Hulu miniseries. And why do I want to watch a show about the exact same situation on a whole other network less than a year later?
I mean, I feel that, because honestly, that's how I felt too. Because even though I really love Jesse Plemons and I love Elizabeth Olsen, like, and I know you do too. We've talked about how much we love Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah.
I'm not motivated in any sense of the word to really watch it in any serious way.
I'm really not. Like, and even the way they stylized the character, I've seen the photos of Candace Montgomery in the 80s, and she looked the way they styled Jessica in the Hulu series. Like, HBO's not even taking this seriously. Y'all trying to give us a prettier, more glamorous version of Candace Montgomery. This woman was literally on trial for murder, you guys. Cut the crap. Please cut the crap. Like, she was found not guilty. You know, it was like, you know, it was ruled self-defense. But why are you trying to make her seem more pretty and more likable and just a bunch of other nuanced things that make it clear that you have taken a side? You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just feels very off. Like, a woman died. She was stabbed like 41 times with an axe. This is not your chance to, like, play up how pretty Elizabeth Olsen is. We know she's pretty.
Exactly. It's like, I don't know. It's not giving what you think it's giving. That's the point. So that was interesting to me. Also, I guess the Rachel Williams watched Inventing Anna. She was not pleased by her portrayal. She was not happy with it at all, which I don't know, which I mean, well, let's get into it, because I rewatching the series now. I watched it when it came out, and now and then obviously for this podcast, I rewatched it, and I don't know. Like, I mean, I think it's good. I think it loses its way towards the end, but, like, for the most part, I think it's a solid sort of series. But, like, I think where the show chooses to put its focus and how it is, like, interpreting these characters in the story is to be desired for me personally. So, like, I don't know that I didn't like the B plot with, like, this, like, the girl, like the girl, like the reporter and her baby. Like, that was really annoying to me for a lot of reasons. Like, I didn't like the sort of end where, like, Anna is, like, where they're, like, oh, she has a troubled childhood, or they're trying to, like, find something in her childhood. I thought that was dumb, because it's, like, nobody cares. Like, and then I didn't, like, and then I also thought, like, even just the perspective, the way the show chooses to filter their perspective, and I guess this is part of the reason, it's, like, because they bought the NY Mag story, they had to go with the perspective of, like, telling it through Jessica's, like, lens. But I didn't like that either. I thought, like, she's kind of a boring perspective to even think about. Her point of view, or filtering Anna through Jessica's point of view, is, like, a boring perspective to me.
I disagree, but only halfway. I do think the whole Vivian and the baby thing were deeply annoying, and kind of it kind of took me out of the Anna Delvey story every time her and her partner are discussing the baby or anything surrounding the baby. And, you know, I'm still not completely certain that a reporter would get this attached to a piece that they're writing to go to the trouble of trying to find out about the person's background. However, I actually do like that we see everything filtered through the journalist's eyes, because although she didn't remain objective towards the end, she was about as objective as you could get. I think part of the reason that the real Rachel Williams didn't like how she was portrayed, and I'll talk more about that later, is that she wasn't shown as being primarily the victim. And she needed that. That was like what her book hinged on, right? Like how Anna, I thought Anna was my friend and she like used me and put me in this horrible situation. And we see that. And I think that comes across really well, but it also comes across like, for instance, how she treated Neff when they met initially, how she treated Casey when they met initially, how happy she was to be like a hanger on with Anna. And I think we would only ever get that sort of perspective of Rachel, of Neff, of Casey, of Chase through a reporter's eyes, because everyone wants to pretend like they either never knew Anna or that she victimized them in some way.
I think I would have been more interested in like Anna filtered through like, well, hold on, let me rephrase this. Okay, so Neff, as she exists in the narrative, I don't particularly like. I think she's kind of pathetic, but like that's another that's another thing for another day. But I do think there is a and I don't know. I read the article, but I didn't read Rachel's book. I didn't read Rachel's book, but I do think. But, like, it's a story. They're taking liberties with it, right? They're doing whatever they need to do to suit the narrative. But I am interested in a narrative or a perspective of Anna Delvey that's filtered through, like, a working-class Black woman's eyes. Like, and that's which we don't get. We get Jessica, who is, like, middle-class, white, like, and generally, and her perspective is of that. But there is something really interesting to me of, like, looking at Anna and looking at everything that Anna did through like somebody who's working class and Black and a woman, like, and like how that all functions. Because here's the thing, like, I don't think, and this is why I didn't care about like her childhood or whatever. Like, what's interesting to me isn't necessarily Anna herself. I think Anna's like, she's a type A, like she's a narcissist. She's like a classical, like she's a your classical sociopathic narcissist. What's interesting, what makes Anna interesting is that like Anna herself kind of functions as like a Rorschach test to everyone around her. That's what makes Anna interesting. It's like how people like either reacted or didn't react to her. The fact that they looked at her and essentially saw what they needed to see. Like, that is, like, what makes the story interesting. Like, that is, like, right? But,
yes, I agree. Yeah,
right, that's the heart of it. Like, it's that, like, she's conning all these people, and she kind of does it the same way, but it's, like, what are you, but, like, yeah, she functions as, like, but what are you seeing in her to even make her do this? Because, like you said, the girl is, Rachel's upset because she gets, you see her clearly for what she is, that, like, I don't think she sees herself that. But you see her, you're a hanger-on. You tried to come up.
Right.
You wanted to come up, and you thought this was the girl to do it. You yourself are social climbing, and that's how you got conned out of that money, because you couldn't admit that to yourself.
But let's talk about it. Let's talk about the social climbing. So really quick summary of the show for people who need it, for people who, for who knows what reason, are listening to this without having watched the show. Inventing Anna is about a Russian girl who immigrated with her family in, you know, her early teens, and spent her formative teen years in Germany. Then she came to New York in her early 20s and conned all the people around her into believing that she was a German heiress who didn't want to use her trust fund, or her father was restricting her trust fund, and she didn't want to have to ask him for a penny more. And she needed the help of the influential people around her in order to build an exclusive social club called the Anna Delvey Foundation. And this was her dream. This was her goal. There'd be exclusive art. There'd be a restaurant portion. There'd be like a club portion. All elite, all exclusive, only for the cream of the crop, the crustiest of the upper crust, right, of New York and global elites would come to the Anna Delvey Foundation.
The problem is all she had was the strength of her name. And her name wasn't going to go far because people had no idea who she was. So she built this alter ego from the ground up. And in the series, we only see her come out of character maybe 3 times max. And, you know, the span of the, I think, the 2 years of her life that the show covers through interviews with the people who knew her and things like that. But most of the people around her, most notably her boyfriend, Chase, were only around her because they believed she was a German heiress. He specifically was only footing the bill for everything because he was making an investment and expected her to do the same when she came into her trust fund.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, even, yeah, you're right. Even Chase, like, which he, too, is just sort of... He's also social climbing.
Even, especially Chase. Nobody was more concerned about that woman's money than Chase. Nobody.
Nobody.
Like, she's got... Because he's a tech bro who's bleeding money out the ass, you guys. He's bleeding money, and he needs some money.
And it's so interesting, because he... Chase gets with her really because of this reason why a lot of men of color do this, which is like they see white women as like a way to like not even necessarily as a social as a way to like social climb. Like they see like that, like if I get a white partner, or specifically a white partner who's rich, like that will open me up to a different class of people and like thereby like maximize my own networking opportunities and like give me like more access or easier access to the capital I need to climb. It's social climbing. Classic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And we also see this with the Chase character more when they are living with his friend, right? He has a friend who's a wealthy older New York socialite. You know, she's like in her 50s, and Chase and Anna actually lived with her briefly, and she actually eventually became Anna's mentor. But when he's living with her, he's also like finessing that relationship to get in this woman's good graces and remain in her good graces so that he can have access to her connections and get more money from them. Like, Chase did a lot of what everyone accused Anna of being. He may not have lied about his name and his nationality, but he made up an entire identity where he had these Indian immigrant parents, right?
Right.
Even though he was adopted by white people, he made up this entire identity of like, oh, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. And your family was literally middle class, living in Ohio, having a really nice upbringing in a nice, quiet community. And he had people actually working for him, right? And not paying them.
Right. Right.
Like, this is the guy who wants us to think that he's a victim of Anna. Like, no, if anything, y'all were playing the same game and she played it better.
It's interesting. Like, I think in real life, Anna does, like, the Chase character, he is like, yeah, he's a tech bro. But I find it so, you know, kismet that they ended up finding each other and liking each other, because I do think a lot of how like the tech industry, how like tech in Silicon Valley functions now is Anna. Like they are also functioning in a similar manner to Anna, in that like they are
fake
not.
Fake it till you make it.
It is all fake. Like none of it is real. And they are just, they are lying about how well these products work. They are lying about how much money they're making. They're just lying and then hoping that like, oh, well then if we get it, then it'll all shake out. Then we will have done it. And like, nobody has to know that we were just straight up lying. And mm-hmm. that was like,
don't one of the lie about how many people are on board. Like, oh, we already have this investor and that investor.
Yeah.
And you better get it on the ground floor.
Yeah, it's just lies. And it's interesting because it's like there was what as I was rewatching it, I was like, yeah, like it's funny. Like if Anna had done it, if Anna had gotten the loan from that banker, she, you know, who was like basically like falsifying information, if he had just done it, and then she had gotten the money, and then she had flipped that club and actually done it. Like, it's crazy. Like, we would laud her. Like,
right. As soon as Baby Girl turned her first profit, nobody would have cared. And honestly, they would have pulled an Emperor's New Clothes where they would have all just, like, ignored the fact that she wasn't an heiress because she had made it work, because she had pulled this off.
Oh, yeah. We would talk about her in a completely different light. We'd be like, you know, she's so brave. She's like a maverick. She, you know, went against the grain. She just believed in herself. So when Anna is like parroting these sort of things of like, when Anna's sort of parroting her delusion of like, what do you mean? Of like, I'm a woman. I'm a woman in business. I am trying to, and you will just hit women in business. Like, when, and, you know, and Jessica is just like, all confused of why she would say that. It's like, how are you confused when like white men literally get up out here and do this every day? Like, this is
right. You know, you talked about Anna being like a narcissist, but that's sort of that level of narcissism and that level of delusion, that level of self-aggrandizement and entitlement is what makes the most successful Fortune 500 CEOs. Absolutely. It is the delusion that makes the most successful, like, tech companies and billionaires. If she had been successful, we would be revering her the way that we revere people like Steve Jobs and what's his face from Amazon, Jeff Bezos.
Yes,
this is narcissism. This is sociopathy at play, but they're turning a profit.
But they're turning a profit. It's like, and I think, and so, like, in that, I wish the show, and I think that's my thing. I wish the show would have made that jump, that connection, that would have just connected of, like, yes, Anna Sorokin and, like, Jeff Bezos are the same person. Yes, yes, yes. Like, these are not good people.
Right.
Like, you get that, right? And that's, I think, also where I'm coming from in terms of, like, desiring for the show to be filtered through, like, a working class Black feminine perspective, because it's like, I think somebody of that background would make that connection, because to me, ultimately, that's what annoyed me about the show, was that like, Jessica is just so confused about like, what do you mean? Like, what does it all mean? I'm like, this is what it means. Like this, it's like, it was so close, but it didn't want to make that final step, if that makes sense.
And just a FYI to the listeners, Alex is using Vivian and Jessica interchangeably.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Vivian is based on Jessica. Yeah. No, it's interesting because I think they came a lot closer than even the show is aware, right? When Vivian, you know, reflects on how the man who is now her supervisor threw her under the bus many years ago and derailed her career after he pressured her to write an article, you know, rushed the article, even though she hadn't done her fact checking, and then allowed her to be dogpiled alone when certain information came to light. And, you know, she comes really close. She's like, this wouldn't, if this had been the other way around, you would have lost your job opportunities and your job offers. This only happened to me. So like, she understands Anna's perspective more than she thinks. But it isn't until the end when she actually absorbs it, when she starts seeing Anna as a person and not just a story, right? But I really want to talk more about Neff and Anna's relationship with her wealthy New York socialite friends. I use the term friends loosely, and her relationship with Neff. Neff's character, I'm not going to lie, used the term pathetic. I thought that was a bit extreme, but she's not. But yeah, she's not. She's not.
No, like I know.
She ain't the brightest bulb. She ain't the brightest bulb. Like I really can't cape for Neff. However, I do understand why she wouldn't turn on Anna, because she was the only person, honestly, who wasn't shafted by Anna. She's the only person that was ever repaid in full by Anna. She's the only person that ever experienced anything close to a true friendship with Anna. Anna came the closest to telling Neff about who she really was than anyone else. Mm-hmm. However, Neff, you've seen the overwhelming amount of evidence that she is committing fraud at best. How are you standing beside that? How are you trying to be her rock right now, sis? Be for real.
Right. It's like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, the Neff is like, I am so confused by her characterization.
It is a confusing, and listen,
I understand, again, I understand, especially too, and I think this is the middle, this is the closest we're going to get to the working class perspective. I understand when it's Anna versus those people, why she's going to choose Anna. Because yeah. I don't actually feel sorry for anybody that got screwed over by Anna, except maybe, gosh, what is her name? Nora, the woman who became her mentor, simply because she was actually literally stealing money from Nora's credit cards, right? Everyone else gave Anna that money freely, and more importantly, they had it to give. So are y'all really victims?
Same. Like, I don't particularly care. Like, I don't feel bad for anybody. I don't even, I mean, you're bigger than me. I also don't feel bad for Nora. But, like, I mean, not also, but I don't particularly feel bad for Nora. Yes, I'm like, you, fuck you. Like, I too am like, fuck all these rich people. Like, particularly the Katie Lowe's character. Fuck her, too, because she, you're, you all were goofy. My God,
she's the worst.
I'm like, you all were goofy. Congratulations. But, like, I do.
Rachel's the only friend she has that isn't like wealthy, right? Well, she's like considered like, I guess, upper middle class for New York or middle class, but she came out to New York. She's not a New York native. She's working for Vogue. This is her dream job, but she's not wealthy, right? And this is why she liked hanging out with Anna so much. She admits in court under oath that Anna paid for everything every time they went out, totaling much more than what she spent in Morocco. Was she bulldozed? Was she blindsided? Was Anna wrong for letting that girl charge her work card and then not paying her that money back? I think she gave her like $5,000, right? Out of like the $30,000 that was owed. Anna was absolutely wrong for that. Anna was absolutely wrong for that. But like Anna's lawyer tried to make clear in court, she didn't make you do that, nor did she steal your credit card and charge it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, baby, after the first $1,000, I'd be like, girl, you got to handle the rest of it. Like, I wouldn't even do, that's what I'm saying. It's like, where you are goofy within yourself. Cause like, this person is your friend, but you don't really know that much, like friend. I say that like with quotations around it. This is your friend, but like, you don't really know anything about her. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, what are you're footing the bill, but it's like, you can't really, it's like, think about that for a second. So,
right. Like, so, even if you did know that she was a German heiress, you don't have the money right now. That's all it is. So I would say, look, Anna, I don't have the money to give. Like, I would tell her my work card is maxed out. Lie if you have to.
Yeah, that's
when I get back to New York, we'll figure out a way to wire you the money to get out of here. But I'm leaving.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
hang tight, and we're going to get you the money.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, if I was going to Morocco, like, even when she invited me to go to Morocco, I'd be like, well, you know, I don't really have Morocco money right now, so I'll get back to you when I get back to you. And until she was like, oh, I'm until she like showed me that she had booked the hotel under her credit card, like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, because if it's under your card, it's your problem.
No, because this is the crux of it, right? She didn't tell Anna she didn't have Morocco money because she assumed that, like always, Anna would foot the bill. This is what it all boils down to, because when Anna asked Neff to come with her to Morocco, Neff was like, I gotta work. I can't afford to take these days off. She didn't even ask Anna, are you paying? Am I paying? She said, I have to work. Rachel was able to take the time off work, and she went to this country with her work credit card in hand. For why? You knew you weren't going there to work, so nothing you would have bought there, nothing would have charged there would have been work-related. Why did you bring your work card at all? The only proactive thing Rachel ever did in the series, and I'm not going to hold it against her, was when she conspired with the LAPD to have Anna arrested, right? She found out where Anna was staying. She went over there, scooped baby girl up. Did she drop a dime on Anna? Yes. Was she just trying to get her money back? Yes. Mm-hmm. But then, plot twist, we found out she had already got her money back.
Exactly. So it's like, so what are we... She just wanted to, you know, humiliate that girl the way that she felt humiliated. Which, fine, but say that. Like...
Right, and I'm not mad at it, because if you were my friend and you owed me that much money, and like all of a sudden you're not giving me the money, I'm getting the runaround from you, I'm gonna feel some type of way. But if I get my money back, I might still get you arrested. But if I get my money back, I'm not gonna write a book on how this was the most traumatic experience of my life, because that was some money. You know, your bodily autonomy wasn't violated. You weren't kidnapped. That was some money, honey. That was some money on a credit card. It didn't even come out of your, like, your personal accounts. And then when Vogue found out that she had charged all that to her work card, she was still working there pending investigation. They didn't even fire her.
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. You didn't get fired. So what did you really, so what did you lose out really? Like, yes, you're, I mean, to and her, she says, like, she's in a ton of debt. But it's like, I don't know, white people are always in a ton of debt in this country. That's kind of, like, what it is to be in this country, is to just have a lot, a shit ton of debt.
And you're a Vogue writer in New York. I mean, I find it hard to believe that you weren't, like, scraping by to begin with. But, you know, when we talk about the Rachel and Anna relationship, I think a lot of people forget that when we're introduced to Rachel, she already leaves, for me anyway, she leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Anna invites her to go to the spa with her and Neff, right? And this is the first time she's meeting Neff. Anna and Neff are sitting across from each other. She sits next to Anna, and Anna's addressing the room. She's addressing the both of them. But Rachel's directing all of her responses to Anna and pretending as if Neff isn't even in the room. But then you want people to feel sorry for you later? And she does this again with Casey. She basically verbally attacks Neff when they're all in a training session. And then when they're in Morocco, she's like, is this what you do? Just hang out with 20-something-year-old clients all the time? And, like, questioning everyone else's motives except for her own. But then when Anna screws her over, she tries to get Casey and Neff on her side. Rachel Williams is just as much of an opportunist as Anna. She's just not as smart.
Right. And then it's,
and I think,
like,
that's a problem, is that it's so hard to see Anna as a villain when all of these people are trash, except for
that's what I'm, and that's what I'm
Casey
saying.
And Neff are the only good people here.
That's what I'm saying. It's like every, and that's why I'm like, it's a Rorschach test. Like, everybody here is goofy. Even, like, so even the real life girl, the Katie Lowe's character in real life, she gave this interview to article to Vanity Fair, and, you know, in Vanity Fair, she's complaining about how she's portrayed, and, you know, she's like, and, you know, did you know Shondaland paid Anna like $300,000 for her life rights? But then the interviewer's like, okay, but you wrote a book and you got money. So what are you, so what are we saying here? Like, what are we right. saying and, here?
And the show wasn't centered around Anna's experience with Rachel. It was centered around Anna's experience with everyone that she met in New York. And you were a very small portion of it. We literally could have had the show be just as engaging without the Morocco bit. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. Because she met so many influential people. And we can say with certainty, minus the Morocco situation, which Anna didn't know was going to happen. She didn't know her cards were going to be cut up, or she was going to be stranded there without a means of payment. She did not foresee that. She did not get Rachel and Casey to go with her to Morocco, only to not be able to pay. Every other interaction she had with Rachel was on the up and up. And I believe she did see Rachel and Casey as friends, because she was not using them for their money or their connections.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, the only person who seems to be not have, like, prospered in all of this is Neff. That's what I'm saying. Like, Rachel got a book.
Well, I mean,
Jessica got an article. She got some money. What did you get, Neff? What did you get? And this is where I come back to the Neff.
She got the money back that she loaned Anna. She's the only one who got her money back.
But, like, everybody seemed, but, like, Neff was, like, she's a, like, I don't know if the real Neff, the real Neff is, like, an actual aspiring, like director, writer, but I'm, like, you should have at least gotten a writing credit on the series, honey. Like, what did you get?
She really should have tried to finesse that. She really should have tried to finesse that girl.
Bag fumbled. Like, oh, man.
But, let's talk about the one other character, people that I think are, like, I wouldn't go so far as to call him a victim, but a person that I actually think was used and exploited by Anna, her financial advisor, Alan Reed, right?
He was another goofy person, but yes.
He was goofy, but here's the thing. I think the show set up why he was able to be bamboozled by Anna very well, right? When we're introduced to Alan, we meet his daughter, who's fresh out of culinary school. This was her latest whim that she has now lost
the motivation to do. She's going to take some time off and find herself, and she needs some money to do that until she can figure out what her next passion is and use his money to fund that, right? Then enter Anna, this very passionate, almost aggressively passionate young woman who has money, but she's trying to do it on her own. And she's so passionate, and she's got all these plans, and she's a hustler. And I think he sees in Anna everything he wishes his daughter were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she picked the right person at the right time. And that was honestly just fate. Like, she picked the right one. He's like, I can't with this kid. I've given her everything, and she produces nothing. I've got this like, parasite of a child who's never going to do anything with her life, and she's going to bleed me dry. And you got this one who's actually trying to hustle, and she's actually trying to do it. So if I can't guide my kid in the right direction, maybe I can help guide her. And I think that's where that was his Achilles. He saw this damsel in distress, and he hearkened back to his own child and was like, I'll do whatever. And I don't even think when he was, checking that box on the form that says, you know, can she provide these funds, that he thought he was falsifying anything. Like, he was drinking the Kool-Aid by the pitcher, you guys. He really believed that she was an heiress. He really believed that he was speaking to her bank in Germany. He really believed that.
That's what I'm saying. He really believed that shit. But then it's like, I mean, I guess you believe what you choose to believe, I suppose. Like, because that was crazy. It was just so crazy.
So if Alan said, like, yeah, you know what? Like, she played me. She conned me. He was played.
He was played.
Chase wasn't conned. Chase was outdone at his own game, period. Rachel wasn't conned. Rachel might have felt pressure, but Anna literally never said, Rachel, put it on your cards. When she's like, I don't have the money, then she looks at Rachel. Rachel volunteers for the first time in their entire friendship acquaintanceship. Rachel is put in the position to pay, right? Casey got food poisoning before she could really suffer the consequences of being in Anna's circle. Neff got all of her money back. So, like, I feel like the only people who were done dirty were all of these banks that she was absolutely lying to, right? But someone made the really good point that when the banks lie to us, the public, we bailed them out.
Listen, I will never feel bad for a bank losing money. I will never feel bad for, like, rich people losing their money, like, ever.
Same. But now here's a critical question. How close do we think Anna was to realizing ADF, the Anna Delvey Foundation? Like, do we think she was like a week away, a month away? Because remember, like, she, when she was in Morocco, she got approval pending an investigation to verify her trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
How close do we think she really was? Because do you think she would have been able to like sweet talk and finesse her way into making that investigation successful or into not having to be investigated at all? Do we think she could have, like, finessed a situation where she throws a bunch of words at the wall and hope they stick, and then these people don't investigate her trust? Like, how close do we think she was?
I think she would have, if she could have found, like, an in-person true blue white man to, like, do it on her behalf. Like, if she had had, like, she could have found a white man and an old crotchety white man in a bespoke suit to go sit down somewhere and say a bunch of bullshit, like, and then leave. She could have, that would have been hers. It would have been hers, because I think that's what because when I look at, like, even just like the other day, like the Silicon Valley Bank, like, being defunct and having to be bailed out by the government, like, I'm just like, there's no way. Nobody is doing any actual real fact checking on any of this shit. People are just talking, and then people are like, yeah, and then they're doing it. Like, that's what's happening. That is what's happening.
If I learned anything from this show, I learned that, you know, to various extents, obviously, gender and color play a huge role in this, but you can get really far in life saying the right thing to the right person at the right time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you understand, I mean, and so then that brings me to another, I guess, like, because, you know, I love a scam. I love a scammer. So, like, that brings me to another scammer of, like, why I really want to see that story come up because I'm interested, and I want to see it like well done. Like, I don't want to see it like badly, but to me, that's why Doris Payne is like truly the most interesting scammer, because it's like she did all like, because gender and race do play such a huge factor in like whether people are going to buy what you're saying or not. Like, that's why Doris Payne is like really interesting to me, because it's like she was just kind of doing it and like having that race, gender, like having that complication of being Black and a woman, and versus just, you know, Anna's just this white woman. And she was still able to like con all these people. Like, that's fascinating to me. Like, that to me is more fascinating. Like, or I'm interested in like how that happens, because I think when you consider that, I do think there is this idea that like everybody has their context. Cause something that like Anna Sorokin said in like an interview, and I think they also mention it in Inventing Anna that I find interesting, is that like she was able, is that she got bored essentially, right? Like, she was able to finesse these wealthy people, like all these wealthy people, and she could have just done it forever, but she wanted, wanted to take that next step into like business and finessing business. And she was saying how like when she did that, she's like, the first thing she did is like she dyed her, or not the first thing she did, but like after a while she was like, okay, well, let me go dye my hair brown and they'll take me seriously. Like, so that is,
yeah, it's like this really honestly very ugly reddish brown color, but it had the boys taking her seriously.
That's what I'm saying. They took her seriously then. So it's like, so like that's, that is interesting. Like I said, like, it's the Rorschach test of it all. Like, that's so interesting to me. It's like something as dumb as like changing your hair color is going to make people give you like $250 million. Like, what? Nuts. Mm-hmm. Nuts. Nuts. Totally nuts.
Yeah, I agree. I think Julia Garner is a great actress, although that accent was always sending me. I personally couldn't take her seriously. I don't know how they took her seriously, because I'm like, sis, Croatian, Serbian, Russian, German, please pick one. Pick an accent.
That's true.
Stick to it.
She was all over the place. She was all over Eastern Europe.
All over the place. But I agree. I do think that the Anna Delvey persona serves as a Rorschach test. People see what they want to see out of her. And I think it's important, too, concerning the Neff character, because when she saw Anna, all she ever saw was a generous, hardworking woman. Neff is the only person who saw her like that. Like, maybe Alan thought she was hardworking as well, for sure. But he didn't get to see the side of her that was so generous with her money and was tipping $100 bills to everyone every day, right? Mm. Nora was actively robbed by Anna. So she definitely didn't see that side. She saw the side of Anna that was running up her credit card bill and living at her house rent-free. Chase saw the version of Anna that was like a messy bitch that lives for drama.
Yeah, a stepping stone to his own like ambitions.
Right, but Neff saw her as a real person and a good person at that. And like, I think part of the reason why I can't all the way hate Neff is because she knew who to try. She stole from people that had it to lose, and she left the poor working class girl alone. She did borrow some money from Neff, and then she gave that money back in full. And Vivian points this out as well, like part of the reason why Anna stayed at the 12 George for so long was because of Neff. I think several times in their interactions that she wants to put the Anna Delvey character down and be a real person with this woman. Like, she gets drunk. They get drunk in Anna's hotel room, and she tells Neff about the time when she didn't have any money growing up. And Neff, rather than letting this girl talk, runs her big mouth and is like, you didn't always have money? And then, of course, she flips the switch back on, right? But I think she so badly wants to take this character off, at least for this girl.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know that I find anything. I don't know. That gives me like a squick for some reason that I can't sort of put my finger on right now, but it'll probably come to me later. But I don't think it's not boring, but like it's interesting to me how, yeah, she gives Neff's money back, but then like Neff continues to labor for Anna for free. Like, Neff expounds.
Oh, you mean when Anna goes to jail?
Not, yeah, that, but also, like, when Anna is, like, when she's hooking up Anna with her whole network, like, and when she's saying the 12 George, like, she's not paying for that. Like,
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm misremembering the chronology. She was hooking Anna up with her entire network, and this was a time when Anna was still tipping her $100 bills. Then she loaned Anna money. Anna was exposed basically by the head concierge of the hotel.
Okay.
Anna gets kicked out, and then as Anna's leaving, Anna pays her all her money back and asks her if she wants to come take a trip with her, right?
Right.
The free labor, I don't remember. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember the free labor coming in until she sets up an entire Instagram page devoted to Anna's trial fashion.
Oh my God. Like, I mean, that was pathetic. There's that. There's hooking her up with the stylist. Like, it's just like, what? Like, you're still somehow leveraging. I mean, I guess my thing is like, I don't know why. You, after it all comes, because particularly, like, the jail, like, after it all comes out and it all, like, is exposed, I don't know why you were, like, trying to convince your friend or this person, this contact that you know that you're good with, who is a stylist, to, like, take a chance on this girl who's in jail. Like, I mean, I will chalk that up to, like, maybe the writing, because I could see, and that's what I'm saying, the writing of Neff is what's devastating to me, because I could see, like, a world in which Neff, like, the perspective of, like, Neff is like, okay, like, she calls, like, a friend who's a stylist that maybe she owes a favor, and she's like, listen, this white girl is crazy, and, like, it's this New York Mag article. It's this reporter who's already writing this article about her. If you dress her for the trial, like, we can make your business go crazy. Like, I could understand that. And I think if that's mm-hmm. the position that the show took, and if they wrote it that way, I would have been into that of, like, here, like, we're going to finesse. Because, like, that, to me, like, says another thing of, like, yeah, it's everybody's profiting, or, like, there is a profit to be made. But no, they're like, hey, girl, do me this favor, like, believe it, like, Neff, get the fuck together, like.
Yeah, so I'm gonna eager? Have to co-sign that.
Why are you so eager to be, like, the mammy to her Scarlett O'Hara? Like, let's talk about it. Like, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree with this. We do need to talk about it. But also, and maybe this is just me, I felt a little bit of vindictiveness off of Neff trying to make sure that Anna's trial was the talk of the town and that her trial fashions were always a bunch of little cute fits. I always felt like it was like a fuck you to Rachel. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. I always felt like she was using Anna's trial to, like get in a little dig at Rachel. Like, I don't think she ever forgot Rachel's initial treatment of her. And then when you couple that with the fact that, like, Rachel essentially ratted Anna to the police, like, I really think that it had more to do with her disliking Rachel than liking Anna. And this theory is compounded by the fact that even though Neff was writing so hard for Anna, it took her an eternity to finally actually visit Anna in prison.
Maybe.
I don't know. It was giving Mammy. It was giving a lot that it didn't need to give. You didn't need to go that hard. You're not her defense attorney. You are not her mother. You are not the reason she's in jail.
That's what I'm saying. And then, like, and to end it, and then to end all of it, it's like, did you get a book deal, Neff? Like, do you have a fancy New York Mag article? Did you get $300,000 to get your life? No, you didn't get any of that. Like, you don't even. So what happened? What was it all for? I think that just rubs me the wrong way of everything. Everybody got something out of it except for Neff. And I don't know how to feel about that. Like, I don't know how to feel about the black girl essentially being the one who ended up where she started. Like,
because she's the only one who was an out for herself. And maybe this is what Anna liked about her. But this is the reason why when you say that the real Rachel Williams didn't like how she was portrayed on the show, all I can do is roll my eyes. Because like you said, she had to come up. And you weren't portrayed badly. If anything, I think she was portrayed with a lot of nuance. I think she was portrayed with a lot of sensitivity, especially after the Morocco situation. Like, if anyone was portrayed badly and in a cringe-worthy way, it was Neff, not Rachel.
Yeah, because even, like, because listen, the Rachel girl is so unserious. Like, even in the Vanity Fair article, the interviewer's, like, mentions that, okay, you got conned, but, like, you also got to, you sold a book, so, and it's a popular book, so what are you upset about? And she's like, I don't want to dwell too much on the impact, because it's been however many years, but it took a huge toll on me, and, like, having been betrayed by someone I trusted, and to have been betrayed in such a huge way, I just, like, her entire identity had been a completely sham. And that really sends you into a ricochet of memories. It's like, bitch, cry your tears with your money. Like, get away. Like, what are you upset about? I'm so over you.
Okay, but can we talk about when Todd basically said this exact thing to her and dragged her and read her for filth on the stand? That was, like, one of the highlights of the entire series. He's like, you were a hanger-on that was trying to come up on a German heiress and saying, I know her, and trying to name drop and trying to get into nightclubs on Anna's name and try to get into restaurants on Anna's name. You haven't spent a fraction of what she's already spent on you over the years. And you got paid for that article. You're getting paid for your book. You already got your advance. Go wipe your tears with your money. Stop playing the victim. And yo, it's amazing to see the same jury that was like commiserating and wiping their tears the day before look at her like, bitch, you thought.
I know, bitch, you thought. Like, even alone.
Because I loved that those two courtroom scenes because it shows just how easily swayed people are by emotion, which is the whole reason why so many people were conned by Anna in the first place. Mm-hmm. But then it shows too how like a lot of people get off on portraying themselves as the victim, mm-hmm. because it gives them a spotlight, however momentarily. And Rachel was people. She couldn't call off Anna's name anymore because Anna was not an heiress. Anna owed her a bunch of money, Anna this, Anna that. But she could get a little bit of love for being Anna's victim. And then when she was no longer portrayed as that anymore, it's when it became a problem, right? When the public was like, girl, be for real. You got like $300,000 in this book deal. You're trying to close a deal with HBO. You got $1,200 for the Vanity Fair article. You kept your job. You made your rent. What's the problem?
Right. Like,
right, you know, yes, Rachel Williams is a very unserious person.
She's very, very unserious. Very deeply unserious. But that's it. So, like, in general, what do you think about overall, like, of the series, just, like, in terms of the pacing, the way it looked, like, what are your feelings on all of that?
Well, before I say my feelings, I don't want to point out that a lot of the critics of the show say that the show has an inconsistent tone. And I want to kind of rebut that a little bit by pointing out that Anna is a very inconsistent person.
Okay.
And it's got to have an inconsistent tone because she gives different energy around different people, different times of day, depending on what she's got going on in her business. The Anna who was with Chase versus the Anna who's trying to get her business off the ground and working together with Alan versus the Anna who is being vulnerable with Neff versus the Anna who is robbing Nora blind are all different people. How can we have a consistent tone with somebody who is a con artist?
I don't know. I agree with that note. To me, like, I get what you're saying, because it's like I get what you're saying, because it's like she's a bunch of different people, she's different people with different people, and you're right, that is correct. And I think for me that goes back to my earlier note of like the show should have never, I think the first mistake is the show like thinking that like Anna's more interesting than she actually is. Like, because I think if you write it from the perspective of like
all these different people extracted a different thing from essentially this blank canvas, then you would probably get a more consistent show.
I agree with that. I don't think Anna is as interesting as the people she was able to pull into her life. And I don't think she's able to pull them into her life. And the show says this. She isn't that interesting. She isn't that charming. She's not that beautiful. In fact, her friend Paul makes a comment that he believes she was for money, old money, because she was, like, plain looking.
Right.
And what the Anna character does is mirror people. She shows them the version of themselves that they like the best and what they want to see.
Yes, I hardcore agree with that.
So if anything, if more than being a master manipulator, because I actually don't think she's a manipulative person, I think she is like a psychological savant. She knows what people's weaknesses and vulnerabilities are, and she leans into that to give them a side of her that they feel is relatable or enviable or admirable, whatever they want, right? Like with the Neff person, with the Neff character, she's trying to be likable. With the Alan character, she's trying to be lovable. With the Neff character, she's trying to be likable. With the Alan character, she's trying to be lovable. With the Chase character, she's trying to be relatable, right? It's not that Anna is interesting. It's that none of those people were as complex as they like to think they are. And she read it, and she clocked it, and she exploited it. Now, whether that's wrong or right, that I leave that entirely up to you. But we're not going to pretend that people don't do that every day. Speaking as someone on the autism spectrum, most of us learn to mask from a very early age. We learn that if we are very easily excitable, anxious, goofy, quirky, kind of offbeat selves, it's weird, it's strange, we'll be ostracized. You learn to function like normal people. And con artists also do this. They learn to be the type of person that will be most accepted by whatever group they're trying to be in. It's high-key y'all fault for not doing, like, some basic fact-checking. I'm not going to lie to you. And if she had been Black, no amount of this of perceived charisma or knowledge about the way people's brains worked would have stopped y'all from hitting that Google real quick.
Exactly. I agree with that. I agree with that. So, like, that's the same thing. I also found the tone to be kind of inconsistent, but I also think you can chalk that up to the perspective that they chose to filter it through. I think Inventing Anna was, this is post Bridgerton. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Inventing Anna, like, I think solidified the next sort of like big hit. I mean, even though, like I said, I personally, critics found it inconsistent. Like, it was a huge hit. It was another big hit for Netflix. And once again, sort of solidifying Shonda's sort of outfit over there at the Netflix place. For Inventing Anna, I think once again, it was fine. It was strong in the sense of, it was strong. I just thought like it leaned on a lot of things that I'd seen before. And I guess I wanted something that it wasn't trying to be. So that's my own personal problem.
I thought it was fine as well. My major criticisms are the inconsistent accent. And I haven't heard Anna Sorokin speak. I'm willing to bet that she probably did sound quite that terrible. And Julia Garner is trying to sound like her, but the accent is deeply distracting. I also have the criticism of I didn't want to see that much of the boyfriend Chase as I did. I thought he was a really annoying character to watch and just not fun to watch at all. The most fun I had with Chase was when the Nora character or the Paul character were also on screen.
Yeah, sorry. The Chase character was unneeded for me. Like, I mean, not unneeded, because I think there are some things about that he puts into perspective, but like I could have done with or without him. He was whatever to me. But yeah, all in all, my grade for this is a basic. It's fine.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a basic 2, and I thought I would like this more than I did because I grew up with Anna Klumsky. Hashtag my girl. Hashtag Bear Cave. You know, right. You know what it is. And I love Julia Garner. And there you have it, everybody. This is everything that we think made Inventing Anna basic, provocative, insightful, and I guess slightly binge-worthy if you're bored. If you'd like to check out the series, Inventing Anna is streaming on Netflix. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic, be sure to share it with your friends. If you're a patron, be sure to check out our Inventing Anna playlist if you haven't already. Tune in next week as we keep the season going by recapping the BBC Three and Hulu original Normal People, the story of one couple's tumultuous relationship over many years, based on the best-selling novel by Sally Rooney.
The Good, The Bad, The Basic is currently streaming on all major podcast platforms, so be sure to tune in to our regularly weekly episodes on the go. Leave us a review on your preferred platform and share our weekly episodes on your social. Follow us at The Good, The Bad, The Basic on Twitter and Good Bad Basic Pod on Instagram to get in on our daily content. Also, be sure to follow our SoundCloud page, The Good, The Bad, The Basic, where all of our weekly episodes debut, and subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. If you love this sort of content and want more, become a show producer and patron over on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/goodbadbasic. Your support allows us to keep bringing you our regularly weekly episodes as well as exclusive bonus material. Until next time, bye everyone.